This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Bent Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
Described by Tony Bennett as a fabulous performer with a knockout voice, Nina Ferrow is one of Melbourne's amazing entertainers with a range of styles including pop, blues, soul, jazz, bluegrass and country. With an Italian heritage, including a mezzo-soprano grandmother who took great interest in the young Nina's musical abilities, perhaps there was never any doubt that Nina would end up in the music business. To tell us a little more about what happened after that, it's my pleasure to welcome to Bent Notes, Nina Ferrow.
Hello, David, and hello, listeners.
Let's start with your grandmother. What was it that she saw in a young Nina?
Well, because she was around a lot more when I was growing up, she was the first one to hear a lot of the things that I was doing. Mum was at work, and so my grandmother kind of raised me, and she heard that I had a voice in me. And unfortunately, she passed away when I was still quite young, about 12 or 13. But by then, I was singing. I mean, I was singing from a very young age. So she's the one that sort of said to my mother, "Do you realise your daughter has a voice in there?" And was like, "Oh, okay." So I was in musicals at school. I played the lead in the junior school production of The Pied Piper of Hamlet.
Oh, did you really?
So I played The Pied Piper when I was 12.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's on video somewhere. I do have to find that. That would be a good laugh. So it started very, very early on. And then unfortunately my grandmother passed away, but my parents are both very musically minded. My mum sings. She's got a beautiful voice. And my dad is, he paints. So neither of them did this for a living, mind you, but they love music. And so my education was what came through the record player predominantly.
Music on at home all
yeah,
the time?
Yeah, all the time. And my parents were big into the 50s kind of scene. And so 50s rock and roll and 60s Motown. And I was basically bottle fed on Elvis Presley. Elvis, Aretha, that kind of thing. Aretha was my first real light bulb flash moment where I just went running for the record player and stuck my head in the speaker and just thought to myself, who is this? What's that sound? It was just an incredible revelation when I heard her sing.
How old were you when
I was young. I was about 8 or 9.
Oh.
Yeah, probably about 8 or 9. I remember Spanish Harlem.
Oh.
Mum put that on and Mum said it was hilarious.
Oh, really?
I went flying for the stereo and it's been, I feel like that ever since. Every time I hear her and especially that song, I can't explain it.
So you know it really grabbed and obviously grabbed your attention if you're going to put your head in the speaker.
Yeah, it did.
You don't know what it was about the song, voice?
No, but then, you know, it's really sometimes it's hard to describe how music affects you. You can sort of go, well, it makes me feel this or, it's such a thing that's tricky to quantify. And so I still can't explain that feeling. I really can't. So I won't.
So when did you realise that this music thing of sticking heads in speakers was going to become your life?
From quite early on, yeah. It was pretty self-evident. But by the time I was 13 or 14, particularly 14, I was already doing gigs. I was singing at my friends' weddings and, you know, that kind of thing. And then by the time I was 15, I was doing some backing vocals for a family friend who was a cabaret artist around town. And then by 16, 17, I was fronting jazz bands. So it was just happening. I was doing a lot of singing at school. I had a mezzo-soprano voice, so I was trained classically at the beginning. And my voice was very mature for my age. So my wonderful teacher, Miss Catherine Sadler, she saw that in me too. So she took me under her wing and I was involved, you know, at the age of sort of 14, I was involved in the senior school elite vocal ensembles, which are only allowed for 17, 18-year-olds, but I was in that. And so she was amazing. She really helped me to find that path. And I played a bit of piano and I was playing a lot of instruments back then, but I always stuck to the singing. That was my thing.
The mature voice you mentioned, was that because you had just been so active as a young child?
Possibly. I don't know, but I believe so. I believe that it was a combination of how much music was in the house and that I was given the opportunity to do it. You know, I just, my parents loved music, and my brother can sing as well. Not that he's a singer professionally. He plays drums here and there, and he's an amazing artist as well. He draws. He got the whole bag, my brother. He was quite amazing. And we used to sing in three-part harmonies at home. But no one, like, even the thing is, Mum would sing and then Matthew would grab on, and then I'd have to be really careful about it, but I'd jump on a third harmony because if they figured out what I was doing, they'd stop.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because all of a sudden they got really self-conscious. But it was beautiful, and I just thought, well, this is an amazing thing that's happening. They're not quite aware of it, but I certainly am. And I loved it. It was great.
What an amazing...
Housework on Saturdays was never more fun. And when we were singing in three parts.
Singing in three parts by washing the dishes and cleaning the floors. And
yeah, yeah.
What an amazing
two-story house, but you'd hear us from, you know, because my mum's got a very loud voice, God love her. She has. So I think that projection may have come down to me too. But that's what we used to do on a Saturday. It was great.
My guest on Bent Notes tonight is, well, one of Melbourne's amazing entertainers, Nina Ferro. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
The Lady is a Tramp, a concert recorded on February the 13th, 1960, in the Deutschland Hall in Berlin. That was Ella Fitzgerald from the Complete Ella in Berlin album, accompanied by the Paul Smith Quartet. Now, the reason I played Ella Fitzgerald tonight is because my guest is Nina Ferro, and one of her inspirational singers is Ella Fitzgerald. When do you remember Ella Fitzgerald first, Nina?
Oh, I was probably... I know that my mum played a bit of Ella Fitzgerald, but actually it was more about the time I was about 16 or 17, and I was given a cassette tape by a beautiful musician called David Hetherington, Matt Hetherington's father. And on this tape was Ella Fitzgerald, Bessie Smith, Mahalia Jackson, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, Billie Holiday, Sarah Vaughan, you name it, they were on it. And it was a fantastic compilation. And the voice that I think I connected with the most was Ella's. I think it sounded the closest to mine. And so, you know, I learned a lot of her songs, and a lot of people said to me, you've got a very Ella-like quality. And I think over the years, a few other influences have come in, like Nancy Wilson, for example, that kind of thing. But Ella's just great. You know, she swings like nothing else. Her phrasing's amazing. Her pitch is amazing. She's very rhythmic. She's very accessible. As far as jazz singers go, I think she's probably the most accessible as a singer and for jazz as a genre, so that it's more, I think people can connect to her a bit easier than, say, Billie Holiday, who is incredible, but sometimes the sound can you know, deter people from wanting to listen.
Ella certainly has a warmth in her voice that encourages you to keep listening.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very playful and fun as well, and I love that about her. And then she can be incredibly moving, like the emotion that she'll put into a song and the way she will express that communication, for me, is probably why I connected to her the most.
From what I've seen and heard of Ella, she also has a great entertainment capacity over and above the musical. It's not just walk on stage, sing a song, sing another song, sing another song.
No.
It's sing a song and then talk to the audience. It envelops the orchestra, the audience in the show itself.
Yeah.
Is that an important part of your way of operating?
Oh, definitely. It's about generosity. Like, people are generous enough to come and sit down and listen, and they're giving you their energy. It's a really it's a gift. And I think as an entertainer, as a performer, we have a responsibility as well to be generous in that way. So the wonderful Gil Askey always used to say that it doesn't matter if you're playing to 10 people or 10,000, you know, you're there to entertain them. You know, you're there to entertain them, and you might be having the worst day in the world, but that's not your job right then and there. Your job right then and there is to make them forget all the crap. Can we say crap? We're
you
saying
may.
Crap. all the crap, you know, of the day, the week, the year, and entertain them. And the best way to do that is to be vulnerable with them and to communicate and just be real, tell stories. And it's an energy. If you don't bring that energy, it's really noticeable.
Was that a skill that you had difficulty developing, or was it, like your music, a natural extension?
No, that was the harder part for me. I'm actually quite fundamentally shy, and everyone I know who's listening is laughing their heads off right now because it's probably not the same anymore, but I was shy and a bit agoraphobic too. I like the stage because it's I've got distance between me and other people. I don't like being squashed in crowds and doing all of that, so that was a little bit trickier for me. And I think as well, when you're young, you don't know yourself very well. You haven't had as much experience. So in terms of what to talk about, unless you're just a naturally gifted comedian type person, or, I don't know, just very, very gregarious in your natural way, it can be incredibly confronting. Yeah, it can. So it wasn't very natural, but I think I'm at a place now where I actually really enjoy it. I love that part of it just as much now as singing to the audience. I love to be able to communicate with them.
Do you find that the audience feeds off that
Definitely.
And then grows your performance as well?
Oh, absolutely. I find that a night like that, I walk away from the gig feeling like I've got more energy than when I started. Yeah, so it's the same with the singing part of it too. If I don't put absolutely 100% into it, I feel like I've been dragged through the mud if I'm not actually really switched on and engaged in what's going on. Even if I'm not actually feeling fabulous, I still have to engage because it's too hard otherwise. It's too hard. So the audience are a great source of inspiration and energy. It's definitely mutual. You can't separate the two things. I don't believe you can separate the two things.
Once you got your taste for jazz,
yeah,
you went out onto the scene and started performing. What was the most difficult part about getting out there? I think I read a little anecdote about one of the first jobs you did where some music was torn up.
Yeah, that was not nice.
That's not a confidence booster.
No, I had an unfortunate situation where a particular instrumentalist didn't like the fact that there were one too many chords per bar in a particular section, and he ripped it up and threw it at me.
Was it an arrangement that you'd done?
No, it was just a very simple chord chart, but he was obviously having a very bad day and took it out on me. So, and it's at those moments where it's character building, because you go, okay, how do I handle this in this split second? And I kind of laughed it off. I was very hurt and shaken because I'd never had that happen to me before.
Was this mid-show?
This was mid-song.
Oh, mid-song. Oh,
we
right.
We started the song and we got to this. And then I can't remember the whole thing, but I just remember this chart ripped up in pieces coming flying at me. And then I waited to the end of the set or however many songs I was doing. And then I went to the ladies' room and I just had a bit of a cry, got myself together and came back out. And I just thought, that's never happening to me again. I don't know. That's never, ever happening to me again. And so I made sure that everything that I did, you know, my charts, the way I presented it, my communication with the other band members, all of that kind of thing was right for me. And it doesn't mean that I'm going to be liked, because people don't like band leaders, for you guys out there who are listening. Unfortunately, yeah, band leaders aren't all that well liked. I know I'm liked as a person and as an artist, but sometimes as a band leader you have to put up with stuff you don't want to.
How do you become a band leader who's successful?
Oh, I don't know. We might have to come back to that question, because there's so much and I don't know how much time we've got. I'm pretty open and honest, and I think allowing there to be communication in a space. So if someone's got an issue, I want them to be able to come and talk to me about it, because every gig is different from the last and the next. So there's no one-size-fits-all formula. There's nothing like that. And you're dealing with different musicians a lot of the time too. I don't always generally have my band. You know, I have to book people who are available, and it's, you know, it's getting them together. Sometimes you feel like you're in kindergarten, and that can be quite frustrating. But it's communication. I'm just very clear about what I need, and that if there's a problem, they can communicate with me. It's an open door thing. And then if, unfortunately, it doesn't work out, I just fire them.
My guest on Bent Notes is one of Melbourne's amazing entertainers, who I'll just have to be very careful she doesn't fire me.
No.
Nina Farrow. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
You are listening to 2 hours of jazz, as you do each and every Sunday night on Joy 94.9. Well, I was going to say something, but I won't now because Rex has interrupted me.
That's right. Now, Rex has brought in a message from Cheryl. Cheryl writes, "Hi, David. Loving the new song from Nina Ferro, and what a great interview. Brightening up my windy, wet Sunday morning in the UK."
Oh, yay. Fantastic. From the UK. Oh, thank you very much, cry. Cheryl. That's
thanks,
beautiful.
Cheryl.
Oh, that's Rex again. This time it's a text message from South Yarra. "What a great night for jazz. I'd like to ask Nina this question. Mm-hmm. What type of preparation do jazz singers do before they get on stage? Or do you have? Does she have a lucky charm or some interesting technique you'd like to share?"
Well, we stay out really late the night before, then drink a big bottle of whiskey, smoke a pack of cigarettes and swear. No, that's maybe how they used to do it. Me, there's only one particular ritual I have apart from warming up my voice and making sure I get plenty of rest and drink a lot of water and not drink on the gig, and that's brush my teeth. I can't sing without brushing my teeth before I start singing.
Brushing your teeth?
Yeah, before I put my lipstick on and everything else, I have to brush my teeth. I cannot sing with fairy teeth.
Oh, wow.
So I hope that's helpful, South Yarra, but, you know, that's just my little quirk. I don't really have any lucky charms or anything, but there's just a few little – that's one of my, I guess, ritualistic things to do. Yeah.
Well, thank you for answering that's that right. question. I would never have thought of cleaning one's teeth. I must admit I've cleaned my teeth before I come into the station here every week, but –
there you
for
go.
A singer.
Yes.
Marvellous.
Yes. I don't think I'm the only one there. I don't think I am.
I suppose also it means the teeth are clean and shiny in terms of presentation on stage as well.
The last thing you want to do is get up on stage and smile and be all, and no one tells you there's something green stuck there. That'd be embarrassing.
It could be. It could be indeed. Well, your latest album is certainly not an embarrassment, Into the Light. That's been out for a year or two now.
Yeah, almost three, gosh.
A beautiful album, and that's all original.
It's all original.
Compositions.
Yeah.
But you've also featured on another album by Kennedy Snow, which is Sonia Hulbert's project.
That's right.
Called Follow.
Yes.
And these are also mainly self-compositions by Sonia.
Yes, they are.
And you've got to sing on them.
I did. I mean, look, I've known Sonia for a very long time, and she's incredibly talented. She's, and I was going to say, she's incredibly talented for a drummer, and that's not what I meant. She's an amazingly talented drummer and musician and plays piano, but her compositions are beautiful. She has this way of her expression is gorgeous, and we've been performing and working on her stuff for a long time.
Oh. I think that was Sonia heard your comment about being a drummer.
Sorry, Sonny, sorry. She can't listen to this right now because she's watching a movie called The Girls in the Band.
Oh,
this is part of the Melbourne Women's International Jazz Festival umbrella thing. So she's like, let me know how it goes. I don't think I will. someone else can tell her. But this was a beautiful project that I honestly, myself and Kelly Santon have been kicking Sonia in the backside for a couple of years now to get this done because we love A, playing music together, and B, these songs are so beautiful.
They are.
And it's just such a privilege to be able to have put them down on, you know, on, well, plastic, and for you all to enjoy and listen to, and it's wonderful for Sonia. She's an incredibly, incredibly beautiful woman with a heart of gold and so generous. She's one of my favourite people on the planet. So there you go.
We spoke to Sonia in studio.
Did you?
I think it was about 2 months ago, thereabouts. And it was very interesting to hear all about the album.
Yeah.
And that was before a gig where Nalusha Dasinaka sang the vocals.
Yes.
Sonia was telling us that she's been wanting to get this album done for some time, but you weren't here. You were over in London.
Well, no, that's right. I've been living in London. I was there for 11 years and I've moved back I suppose technically about a year ago, but officially only 3 or 4 months ago. This is now officially home again, which is wonderful. It's so exciting. I love Melbourne. And so, yeah, it took a little while. And then when I said to her, look, I'm coming home, and she was jumping up and down. So she quickly got her, you know, got it all together, got into the studio and recorded the band. And then I came home, and a few weeks after I landed, I went bang straight into the studio and we put the vocals down and then continued to produce the album and finish it off and launched it. I think it was April we launched.
That sounds about
right. Yeah, it was early April. Or no, late April. And it's been great. We've had a wonderful response. I know she's had a wonderful response from it, and we've been doing some beautiful gigs, and I think it's really exciting to be a part of the Melbourne Women's International Jazz Festival.
Exactly, which is coming up very, very shortly, not very far away at all. You're participating in the festival as part of Kennedy Snow.
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
And I was thinking today that you sort of fit almost two bands here. One is the international component, the other is the local, in one person.
Yeah. Well, in several. I mean, Kelly Santon lived in England for 10 years as well. Kel and I crossed over. We had at least 8 years together over there. And, you know, Bob Settergreen is an incredibly well-renowned and international artist, and Kim May has done a lot of stuff in the past. So all of us put together, it is a very international band with a local flavour, and I think that's really exciting.
And it's exciting also to have a Melbourne Women's International Jazz Festival.
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many incredibly talented women, and not just singers. This is the thing. There are so many incredible instrumentalists, you know, from piano to drums to guitar to, you know, horns and all the rest of it. And it's wonderful. I mean, it should be celebrated all the time, you know. But it is nice to have a moment where we can really celebrate it in, you know, in this way.
And there's a whole week of it coming up, 4th to 11th of December at Bennett's Lane. It's great that Bennett's is supporting the festival.
Yeah.
As I think they've done for a couple of
years
now.
They've always been very supportive. And so it's going to be great to be there. And also because we're sort of coming to the end of an era in that venue as well. This will be the last one. I think it may be my last gig there. I might have one the end of December. If I do, I'll come see you again.
That would be great. We'd love to have you anytime.
Yeah, great.
Yes. I noticed on the, I think it's the Monday night, it's going back to school. It's all the female school kids coming to perform. And it's just great that they can be part of this because it'll be something they'll remember for years.
Oh, totally.
A bit like your memories of being the Pied Piper and other things like that. So it's great that the festival is including them in the programming.
Yeah.
Any special preparation for this particular performance?
Besides turning up and playing in the right key.
That's probably cleaning one's teeth.
Yes, cleaning one's teeth. Look, you know, we're going to be playing predominantly the songs from Follow, and we'll be doing a couple of originals of my own from Into the Light and some really great covers. We're going to surprise some people with some new material. But it's going to be fun.
And you're in the jazz lab.
We are, the big room.
Which is a nice big room. We need to have a piece of music, I reckon, to finish with.
Okay.
And it's got to be from Follow.
Absolutely.
And I reckon it probably will be Follow.
I think so too. It's probably one of my favourite songs that Sonia has composed. And it's the title track, so I think that's more than fair.
Nina Ferro, thank you so much for coming into Bent Notes tonight. Really do appreciate your time. And yes, do come back and see us.
Well, thank you, David, and thank you, listeners.
Here is Follow from Kennedy Snow on Joy 94.9.
I will follow you where you go. Show me where the house you live.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.